Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Have you ever tried to find some really good talk radio on the AM and FM dial? J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me, you love talk radio. If you're like me, you can't find anything worth listening to on AM. So how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest of the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Here's the story of Chinaman Jack, lived all alone in a tin roof shack, grew red poppies down by the creek, did a little laundry where the water ran deep. The boys went to see him when they got paid, they'd light up and sleep it off in the shade. One gold dollar at the Chinaman shack, bought a yellow smoke with Chinaman Jack. He'd go into town when the weather was nice, buy a little salt and a big sack of rice. Nod and smile at gold dollar down. See, Jack never spent a lot of time in town.
And that song is a song called Chinaman Jack from tonight's guest, Miss Junie Fisher. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. One on one. This is your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with the all elusive and forever disappearing Bobby Jean Bell.
I'm back.
Yes,
it's
you.
It's so good to
are.
Be here. Yeah, it's good to be in the studio, Jim.
Oh, man, it's so fun to have you. But here, a little more, Judy. Okay. We're done with Judy. Judy.
That's such a great song.
Oh, I know. They're all good. I mean, it's really hard to pick one to open the show
it
with.
It was hard to decide what to send you.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. And we only have room for two or three, so, you know, we have to pick them. And, and anyway, Bobby Jean is in town for the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, which starts this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. The admission is free. So those of you who like the Old West, go by William S. Hart Park in Newhall, and the parking is way out off of Railroad Avenue, but you can bus in, and it's a really fun time. And if Noah's the reason, go for their coffee
and the
peach cobbler.
And the authors.
And
the
of course, the Buckaroo Bookshop, and then then there's a Buckaroo stage right across the thing, and they got all kinds of people and free stuff.
It's going to be a fun weekend, always.
It's going to be a great weekend.
This is our 10th year there, and the festival's 26th.
Right. And unfortunately, this year, I cannot attend.
We think we're going to leave a chair with your name and just say, well, be back soon.
I'll give you a couple of my books.
Gone, and
you
gone can, for
you
cobbler.
You can put gone for cobbler. You can put a couple books on there and said, you know, here he sits, really.
Yep. That, it won't be the same without you, Jim.
I think Brill's going to, I think I'm going to give Brill a couple of them. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. I said, just give them away.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We have, because this is a very special writer's block, this is the one we do on Tuesday nights called the One-on-One, we have, as our guest tonight, a young lady who is like, oh my God, she's won so many awards, I don't see how she pins them all on her shirt. she's got, like, the Western Music Association Entertainer of the Year 4 times and the Female Performer of the Year, 3-time Song of the Year winner, the 2-time True West Magazine Best Solo Musician. Junie Fisher was the first woman to win the National Cowboy Museum's Wrangler Award in 2009 for her landmark CD, Gone for Colorado, which is also the 2009 WMA Album of the Year. Her songs have appeared in feature film and documentary soundtracks and have been recorded by artists in folk and Western music circles. Oh, please welcome to the Writer's Block, Miss Junie Fisher.
Yay! Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Hey, Junie. What's hey, going Jim. On? Oh, it's so nice to have you.
So nice to be on the air with you it's, after all this time.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's been
I've
a
been,
long
I've
road
been
getting you on
to
here.
This with bated breath.
Well, I don't know about that, bated breath.
I think so.
What is bated breath? Does anybody
it means
know?
You can hardly breathe.
Well, that's natural for me.
I think it means like anticipation, but...
Yes.
Oh, maybe. Carly Simon did that, and then Heinz took the song and made it about a ketchup commercial.
Oh, yeah.
So you've been sitting there with Heinz ketchup.
That's right.
Okay. Anticipating. Well, there's nothing to anticipate because we're fun folk, and... We treat you right here on the old writer's block.
Well, I would think so.
In 4 years, the 21st of May, 4 years.
Wow.
Same studio.
Yes.
Same building.
Wow.
Same parking space.
Yes.
I tell you, those anniversaries will sneak up on you, but that's a good
I know,
one.
Huh? Yes. Yeah, it's been, we've had a good time
I know,
time
we're
with
coming
it.
Up on our 200th. I think tonight's 198 or something. We're coming up on
we're
the 200th
coming up
show.
Real quick. So anyway, we have you on to talk about your new novel, which
I'm so excited about it.
You should be. It is a great. It's The Girls from Centro, and it is about. Well, I'll let you tell the story. What is that book about, Junie?
About
Do you know? Did you have a ghostwriter?
A girl named Teresa.
Yes.
Who leaves Mexico with her mother and her two sisters. And they leave in the night to head to Arizona for what they hope is a better life. And, well, it just doesn't go very well.
This be true.
But it's a dual story, actually. It's Teresa and her sisters leaving
right.
in the early 80s. And heading for, no, wait, they're in the 70s.
71, yeah.
But book ends in the 80s, in the 70s, and they're leaving Centro, which is the center of Nogales in Sonora is called Centro.
Right.
And then it's called City Center on the Arizona side. So there's a little village there that they've lived in all their life, and they leave. And then the dual part of the story is in the 40s, a young woman, young single mother named Anna leaves her job cooking at a convent to go to Arizona and cook for a family there. And she finds that it's not exactly what she thought, and she sticks it out because she's got a job and she's saving money, and she finds her way back out of there.
Right,
It's a hard trip. And it all ties together in the end, and I can't give that away.
No, you can't.
As a matter of fact, you can't give very much of this book away.
Right.
There's a lot of spoilers in this book.
But it is a dual story, and then there are some sub-stories that weave their way through as well about some charros and... I'm going to say that all these people I've known, I knew them. I've known these people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of elements of, you know, of people that I knew. And so I say in the disclaimer at the beginning of the book that, you know, you're guilt.
Yes.
If you're offended, it's up to the imagination of the guilty, you know, because
if
something in there offends you about a person in it, that means that maybe that's you.
That's you.
Yeah.
You write the book. It's so interesting. As you were talking about the two different kind of stories, but one of them is written in the third person and one is written in the first person.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you chose to do that?
Well, when I began writing it, I was writing Teresa's story. And I had another thing that I was thinking about doing, and it was really writing the book version of one of my songs called Ghost of Del Cielo, which was a takeoff with Tom Russell's permission on a song of his called Gallo del Cielo, about the famous fighting rooster. And as I got into it, I thought, you know what? It doesn't carry a whole story. There has to be more to this, and it has to be more in our modern times. And then I thought, well, I also have to tell this other woman's story, but I can't tell it from first person. It'll be confusing. So I'm going to have to tell her third person as an observer would see it.
Right.
Otherwise, we'd have too many. And then I... I really thought, no, I've got to keep these really totally separate stories. And there's a reason I keep them totally separate. Because the reveal of how the tie-in goes isn't until later in the book. Now, an astute reader is figuring it out.
Before
the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was my intent to not make it really obvious. And, you know, there were I've heard from readers that they go, oh, I didn't get it till the last couple chapters, but wow. But there other people are catching on a little sooner than that. It just depends on how much you're paying attention to the details of when they start figuring out where people are and who people are and why they're there.
Right. Well, you know, the fun part but was not only figuring it out, but seeing if you were right at the end.
Oh, yes. Or being surprised.
Because I do that. I go, I know what's going on here. And I get to the end of the book and it goes, no.
You go like, what?
Where did that come from?
Or, oh, there's that.
Were you there, Jim? Did you have it right?
I got it right.
Or things like, that gold earring again.
I'm this way with songs, too. We want songs to make people go, to make people be able to, if they're paying attention, they'll figure it out along with you, and then they feel so smart that they read it, and they think you're so smart for writing it. That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah,
I got it done, but that was my intent.
When you were writing the two stories, were you writing them the way we read them, or did you write, like, on a story?
No, I really pretty much wrote them as you read
as
them.
As we read them.
We did move some things around a little bit in the editing just to bring Anna into the story earlier. The second protagonist, for those of you who haven't read it, the one who's told in third person, the editor wanted to bring her in a little bit earlier in the story. I said, well, that's not a problem. I'll find a place to move her up to. So we moved her up. But I really was writing them parallel. And the reason that worked for me was it gave me a break from what was going on in this story to go write the other part. Mm-hmm. And then just being careful to place little tiny teensy hints in there. But they're not very obvious.
No, they're not. Actually,
they make you go back.
It's just they kind of build up.
Yeah, and then you
you have to go, wait a minute. And then you go flip back some pages and you go,
wait a minute. Something about that's familiar. And
it's like I was telling Bobby Jean when we were sitting here in the studio before we went on the air, I know that guy that got snake bit underneath the water tower.
Oh, yeah.
He was intertwined in this story somehow, but I'm being an idiot, I could not figure it out. And Bobby Jean told me when she came. So.
Although I got to go back and fact check what I told you now.
Well, you may have to, but.
Now,
you know the guy.
Yeah.
His brother never came back?
Yeah. Right, his brother.
Yeah,
and
okay,
she says, you know the two guys? They were the brothers that they hooked up with when they first got across the river. Yeah.
Now,
you have it. You're on it.
You have a very striking cover to this, and I think it was Bob Bowes Bells. Art, tell us a little bit about that. How did that come about? And then maybe go ahead and talk a little bit about The Crow.
Okay. Well, Bob has been a friend of mine since 2010. I knew Ken Amorosano, who's worked with True West Magazine for some years, and I knew who Bob was, but it wasn't until 2010, and I was at an ill-fated festival in Palm Springs.
Oh, yes.
That Gary Allegretto played in.
Yes.
Richard Chong's band played it.
We were there.
A couple of other... Anyway, it was
I'm not even going to go why it was ill-fated.
With Ken and Bob over breakfast, and we got to talking about a film I had just done called OU Cowgirl, and they asked me about, you know, that and then about my album Let Her Go, Let Her Buck, Let Her Fly, which was also out that year, and we in talking all that about that, you know, Bob and I just like, wow, this, I really like this guy, and we just became friends. And so we'd kept in touch. He had me write some articles for him about early women in rodeo over the years, mm-hmm. and I'd go through town and meet up with him, and we just, you know, so anyway, I've admired his landscape paintings for years. His skyscapes mm-hmm. are incredible. Mm-hmm. Clouds and light and the use of light on clouds and the color. And I had seen one that I said, oh my gosh, Bob, I've got this book coming out and I need this, but I need it with a crow. And he said, oh, I can't find the original of that. And he said, but I'll paint you a new one. Mm. Well, I was going through Cave Creek, and when I do, I stop by and see Bob. And so he said, I'll paint you a new one, maybe a couple. Well, when I got there, he had like four or five he had painted for me.
Cool.
And I thought, oh, my God. Well, when I saw that one, I went, oh, my God, that's exactly what I want. That's I said, I need a crow. Mm-hmm. It needs to be kind of a little bit menacing, but not totally. And it can be, I don't know, coming out of the sky or diving, or, but it needs a crow. And he goes, I got it. And that's what he did. And I saw that and I went, holy cow, that's it. So that's really how it happened.
And then the crow has some significance.
There were no changes.
Okay. And without giving anything away, but that crow, yeah. You got a crow coming in and
going out.
Well, the crow, you know, crow to me is always a harbinger of news or of warning. And in nature, you know, if you pay attention, the crows will always keep you from getting eaten by bears and stuff like that, because they'll always tell you, or they're maybe not telling you that.
No, they're telling each other.
They're telling the other crows you might not get eaten. So I use him as sort of a messenger uh-huh. and sort of a symbol throughout. And then, you know, and Jim, you know this because you're a writer, at the end when the crow picks up the object,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
takes it to her nest,
right.
When I thought of that, I went, oh, I got it. And I thought, I am the smartest person on earth right now.
Was the crow part
that,
of the...
That to me was like, oh my gosh, I just tied this whole thing together.
Yeah, you tied...
Holy cow.
Was the crow with you all along, or at some point did you say, you know what would be helpful is if I had, you know, a message?
You know, the crow came in pretty early. I had the crow kind of following them, and they heard it first off out in the dark when they're out in the desert, and then when she meets up with the two charros in the desert, the crow is there kind of saying, hey look over here, and goes off. And then you know, the crow makes some other little appearances out in the desert as part of desert life in some other little vignette pieces. And then, boy, when I thought, oh my god, the crow has to swoop in the end and do this, mm-hmm. holy cow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it had
and
to
then
feel
I have
really
it appear in the final
yeah.
in the final chapter when she's older. There's still a crow that's uh-huh. following her.
Uh-huh.
Probably the same crow.
Oh, my God. It's been here all this time.
Yeah.
Anyway, just made another element.
So, crows, Mexican women coming across the border, going back across the border, coming back across
and
the border.
And a bad guy.
Oh, my God. A couple bad guys.
Oh, some.
Really I'll tell you what. The family that Anna goes
really
back across
guy.
The board. Oh, mm-hmm. I wanted to shoot him.
Yeah, there's a lot of kids running around with gray green eyes.
Yeah,
gray.
But you know, the way you wrote him reminded me so much of these Eastern European traffickers of human traffickers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
it's like they do it for only one reason. That's
yep.
just they're sex traffickers, and
that's right.
And you know, that's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. It.
That's
evil
exactly
comes
what he was
for
doing.
Himself.
And evil comes
without,
in many disguises.
Without selling them off, he was, yeah.
Yeah, without giving it away. But,
yeah,
The state that those people would have originally come from is the highest human trafficking state in the Union.
Arizona?
No. North of there.
Oh.
Let's just leave it at that.
We'll just leave it at that.
It is a high trafficking state. And I have friends that live up there that work closely with social services, and they said, oh, my gosh, you have no idea how much trafficking goes on here, moving young girls from place to place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really a horrifying thing. And in that, I have them moving, you know, they're moving people around. They're moving babies. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then there are a few of them that show up at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Within the same family. Mm-hmm.
When you chose the time periods to tell the two stories, what made you choose 1941 and 1970?
48.
1948. I'm sorry.
47, 48.
Wow, you're better on that than I am, Jim. Well, about that time, I would have been about 11 or 12. Teresa is me. Uh-huh. Teresa is me if I were a Mexican Teresa's kid living you, uh-huh. in Sonora.
Okay, yeah. So the first person.
And the sisters are my sisters.
Yeah, okay.
And so my sisters asked me, are we in the book? I said, yes. And I tell my older sister, and you're mean. And then I tell my younger sister, and you get kidnapped.
Which was the one that that waved at you when you were left at the hardware store when you were
Luna.
Five?
She ended up being Luna in the book.
She ended up being Luna.
Luna. Well, Richard Paulinelli made his wife a... madam of a whorehouse.
Oh,
so I mean, you know, you can do anything in a book.
We have to use real people, and I'll tell you, it made writing dialogue so easy.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
All I had to do was write real dialogue.
Right.
Between sisters. That was the easy part.
We know
people
that.
Go, oh my God, how do you write dialogue? Oh, it's easy. You just write real.
Yeah, there you go.
Those of us that know and love you and have followed your career as music fans for a long time, you know you as a tremendous songwriter. This is your first novel. How have you found writing a novel to be similar or dissimilar from composing a great song?
Oh my gosh, it's way. I gotta say, it's
two
way more involved because you have the breadth of the you have so much more time to tell the story.
Yes.
And it's going to be read. You know, with songs, they're heard, and they go by, and they're done. And we really have a time frame, you know, that we want to write songs in if we're going to get airplay. And I've never worried a whole lot about keeping them at 3 minutes. I've always written story songs that tend to run a little longer, and that, I do that because that's what I do. But, you know, to me, I realized when I got into this, like, wow, this is a whole lot different. And part of it was because it wasn't as familiar. Songwriting I've done for a really long time. You know, I recorded my first album 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I was already aged when I did that.
Mm-hmm. And that's still probably my favorite because that's the music I met you in.
We don't get to talk about age on this program.
Yeah, yeah.
Listening to Chinaman Jack, I go, wow, I recorded that 20 years
ago. But I felt that was such a great, because this book is not, you know, you're not writing about horses and cats. You know, it's a different it's a different story than what those of us that know you would anticipate we might read.
And that's why I wrote it completely
different.
And I'm not going to say I fought with my publisher about this, but I had to be firm. And they said, okay, well, you know, you can either send us an author photo or we'll pull one off your website. I said, you are not allowed to use hat pictures.
Yeah, because you want,
Well, this is not a Western, and I don't want anybody to pick it up
and
take it home with them,
right.
Thinking it's going to be a Western, and then go, oh, wait, that wasn't a Western.
Right.
Well, no, it's not a Western. It's set in the Western state, but it is not a Western.
Well, and I remember, Junie, when you were kind of first putting things together, you were out on social media kind of asking for people, like, should you use your name or should you,
know,
and... I was kind of glad to see that you went ahead with your name because it does have recognition, but I could also understand that concern that it would be missed.
And I said to one of my writer friends, I said, you know, I really want to stand alone as an author and not count on my music to do this. And she says, okay, well, that's all really noble, but bottom line is you got to sell some books. So use your real name.
Or you could have used the name Iris Tricklehammer and would have been totally separate from Junie Fisher.
So I relented, and I used my real name, but I didn't want to at first, and then I worried, oh my gosh, I'm going to offend somebody with this book, and then I went, oh wait a minute. When have I ever put my filter in for very long?
Yeah, because, you know, it's so interesting, like Mike Blakely, who I'm just beginning to meet and learn about and all, you know, he's been writing music for a long time and writing books for a long time. And it's so interesting that when we read Sinister Splendor, you know, I didn't really think, it was like he's a songwriter, but he's a novelist.
Right.
And it didn't really, mm-hmm. you know, it was okay. There wasn't anything.
And then we ask
about,
him, do you consider yourself a novelist that writes songs, or a songwriter that writes novels? And he goes, both.
Both, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I think we can be both. And my focus in the past few years has been really more on the literary side, because I it's that deal where, okay, well, it's time to, I've done this thing, and I've kind of ridden that pony about as far as that pony can go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a limited market. It's been great to me. Western music has been wonderful to me, but I wanted to flap my wings a little mm-hmm. and see where else I could mm-hmm. fly, and mm-hmm. I knew how to tell stories, because I tell stories on stage every night.
You tell stories. Your songs are stories.
Sure.
And I also tell stories, you know, along with the songs.
Right.
And I feel like I've got stories, you know, I've got stories to tell. So I thought, well, let's see if I can do this. So it really, we all talk, you've probably heard this from everybody, Jim and Bobby both, that people talk about, well, you know, I've always wanted to write a book. I probably will someday. Well, when is that?
Yeah.
When is someday? When it is now. And they go, well, it's so hard.
Well,
no,
yes.
It's not. You sit down and you write.
Right.
And I had started at least three novels over the prior 30 years. Before I actually wrote one.
But, you know, I think we all have.
I think we all go through that.
Yeah, yeah. You start and stop, start and stop. You know, say, throw that away. It's no good. Pick up another name. Pick up another story and try that one.
Right. And then you go, oh, wait, now this one might have some legs.
Exactly.
And it took me, a friend of mine, she just sat herself down, and she was a wonderful essayist. What she could really write were real life essays about her life in ranching, but they are, and they're stories about being a woman working on a ranch. But it's not stories about, oh, and then we had calves in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and then we, you know, missed the thing because we were. They are like more the gritty, like, oh yeah, we had that cow and she was in the pond, and then we, you know, we lost her baby because our milk dried up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really real life things that mm-hmm. just tear your heart out. And she had managed, you know, really just by the skin of her teeth and working hard to write a couple of books of nonfiction and had won a Willa Award.
Oh.
And she was teaching her name is Amy Hill.
This is Amy you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And Amy was doing a workshop at a festival where I was playing. And I'd been talking to her, and she goes, oh, yeah, I'm doing this workshop. And so I wrote back to her, and I said, listen, I'm going to come to your thing, but I'm playing at that festival. So your deal's in the morning, and I'm going to come. But listen, I'm coming with my coat collar turned up and a baseball cap and my reading glasses on. I'm not coming as Junie Fisher. Please don't call me out. I want to attend this workshop. And she said, I promise I won't call you out. So
that
she
works.
Didn't. And I attended, and I sat, and I wrote, and I made notes, and I wrote down the things that she talked about, and she gave us all a homework assignment. There were probably 20 people in the class, maybe 25 people in the class. And the first question she asked was, how many people came here hoping to find out how to get published? And some hands went up. She goes, you're in the wrong class. And I went, wow, lesson number one.
Yeah.
Yep, for
big
sure.
Big lesson there. And then as I learned, wow, how inappropriate for people to think that they're going to go to that workshop and that's what that person is going to give them, because you're not you're not. And I tell other people that tell me, okay, well, I just need to know how to get my book published. I don't need any help. And I go, oh boy, are you out of your league? And you don't know it yet, because I was too. And I didn't raise my hand. I knew better than to raise my hand. But she gave the 25 of us or so an assignment to write. She says, I want you to write now, write for 20 minutes. And then she let us do that. She goes, now your assignment is, here's my email address. Over the next couple of weeks, I want you to hone that down to one paragraph or maybe four good lines and send that to me. She later told me, one person did their homework assignment. That was you. And I sent her not only my homework assignment, but a really cool short story. And she says, okay, I'm going to put you in a writer's group. And it's an online writer's forum, and there's some pretty cool people in it. And I think it'll be a really good place for you to sort of play with your chops a little bit and write to some word prompts and photo prompts, and I think you'll like it. And I did like it. I thrived in that for a good while, and that got me started. So the way Girls from Central came about, here's how that book started. One day, the moderator of the group put up a word prompt, and the word prompt was, my father never forgave me for, and I wrote, my mother drowning the night we crossed the border.
And that's what,
See, mine would have been my stabbing my father's chair with a paring knife.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? I said, I don't know. He said, I think that's a story. You better write it.
Yeah.
And I said, I think I will.
Wow.
And so I started writing, and then I went, wait a minute, I've already got this character, Teresa, who knows a little bit about cockfighting.
Uh-huh.
Which was another reason I wanted
hate
to use
fighting.
Yeah.
An author name, a pen name, because like, oh my gosh, I'm writing about cockfighting and literary circles, their heads are going to fly off. But you know what? It's a real part.
It's a real
part of the world. And it's a part of the world that I don't say that I know a lot about it, but I do say I accidentally went to my first cockfight when I was about 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sheriff of the county I grew up in raised fighting cocks in his backyard.
Wow.
Can we just call them fighting chickens?
fighting chickens in his backyard.
Hey, and we're going to have to break for real quick, Junie.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to cut you off right there. We're going to break for just a few minutes, and we'll be back.
Okay.
And we're going to – Bobby Jean wants to sell something. She's chomping at the bit.
Okay.
So
okay.
Hang tough just a second.
Okay.
When you open your closet door, do you say, I don't have anything to wear? Or do you say, I need something new? Or is it time to retire some of those boring shirts? Or do you say, if only I had, what would you like to see when you open that door? Boots, hats, cool shirts, boho embroidered tops? Out West Shop will revive your wardrobe with new, fresh looks for men and women, all with great style and comfortable fabrics and for every occasion. Shop www.outwestshop.com, enter coupon code SPRING, and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378 for personal attention. Out West delivers style door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world. And remember,
it's
always
a
great
day
out West.
Yeehaw. You are leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? Well, All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a serene country-type setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training if wanted. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100, and when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, we'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. And we all know it's the dog. Because All Dogs Rule is a great place to go. And we know Russ because he's in here every Thursday night, every fourth Thursday night, co-hosting the Writer's Block. So, All Dogs Rule, 805-524-1100. Give them a call. You'll love them. And we are back in the studio. It is now 7:34. We're on the phone with Junie Fisher, and we're going to get you a little bit more of her music. And this is To Remember the Alamo.
Henry Watson stands tall in his Sunday best. Carmelita Pinon is in white. Their grandfather's grandfathers fought to the death for a patch of adobe one night. Oh, what a fearsome battle. The blood flowed like wine in the sand. Who would have thought this would be the same spot they'd end up in love holding hands? They'll remember the Alamo fondly, for theirs was a perfect night. Carmelita agreed with Henry, his soulmate would be.
And that is Junie Fisher, and To Remember the Alamo. And if you want to talk to Junie tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929.
And we won't even screen those calls.
No, we do not screen those calls.
Well, we're lucky if we can pick them up.
Yeah, we're lucky if we can answer them.
We just let it ring sometimes.
Well, I have to tell you that we've had some disturbing incidences happening in the studio.
But you can go ahead and give us a call.
I used to have a show out of Nashville that was in the middle of the night. I was a regular on this show, and sometimes, you know, the DJ would go, I'm going to screen this next one because I recognize this number.
Well, we recognize numbers often, but we can't answer the phone. So.
Yeah, we actually
had one night where the guy, he was a John Biggs. And we were supposed to call him like we did you 5 minutes before the hour. We did. There was no answer. We waited until the hour, called him, no answer. Finally, he called in, and at the same time, Henry Park was calling in. And so I didn't know which one to answer, because if I answered one, it was going to hang up on the other one. So I answered John Biggs, hung up on Henry. Told Henry, I'm really sorry, Henry, but I got John Biggs on the phone, and he's yelling at his kids, shut up, I'm on the phone.
Live radio.
Live radio.
You might be listening to a podcast, but...
Richard Pellinelli was in here cracking up. I have to say, it was...
Well, you remember the one call in the gal, she said she had tried, and she wanted to know about her husband's enlistment?
Yes.
Like, we think you have the wrong number.
Oh, my God. We've had some really cool calls.
Yeah,
it's live radio. It's live radio. When you sit down to write a song, and I'm going to ask you about music now because, of course, we're past the half-hour mark, so I can do that. When you sit down to write a song, do your titles come to you first, or do your lyrics come to you first, or does the music come to you first?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
See, that's exactly the way I would answer, too.
You know, really, the music and the lyrics really do pretty much come together. But what I do before I've written a song, I may have an idea, but I really have to write the story and make the story's twists and turns work. Because otherwise, you just end up writing swill that rhymes.
Ah, and, yes. Good point.
That's not my deal.
That's not your deal.
It is not. I'm not going, oh, yeah, everything rhymes. We're done.
Yeah.
You're not nearly done. But for me, what works is to figure out how do I tell the story, and how do I make it go wham at the end?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that I hope that's my trademark, that I can grab you, you know, by the
short hairs.
Hair at the end and make you go, holy cow, how'd you get there? And I hope that that's what I do. But that is really my goal. So really, I may come up with a line, and it'll be my hook. And the hook is the title of the song. If the hook isn't the title of the song, you're screwing up, because somebody shouldn't have to come and say, "What's the title of that song that goes
right,
like this?"
And right.
Sing the first line. Well, that is the title. You know, that's the hook. And so that's already there. But the longest part of it is figuring out, how do I turn this and how do I make this really flow together? Rhyming is a secondary thing. Everybody worries about, you got to rhyme. And then when they get something that rhymes, they stop trying.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I think you have to go deeper than that. And you have to say, you know, that doesn't work. So we have to find another word to make something rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, you know, I had Songwriter 101 in the streets of Nashville. And I got to co-write with some really cool guys, and I also had a really good publisher who was really a good editing publisher, and he would make me really hone lines one line at a time and get rid of superfluous words. And I think that's really what taught me to tighten up songs. And I was so grateful for that when I started working on my first novel, because my friend Amy, who said, you know, I'm going to be your first editor. I'm just going to show you about editing, and you're going to have to learn to edit. Of course, I had a professional editor for the real book, but she showed me some things, and I just took right to it. And she says, wow, most people aren't willing to give up their darlings. And I said, oh, but I've been a songwriter for a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everybody that wants to write songs has a darling that they don't want to give up that line, and they're almost willing to end a relationship between writers because they don't want to give up some line. And I think, wow, are you just like dumb or what? Because what we have to do is learn to give up those darlings. You know that in writing a book.
Sure.
You'll have something that you thought was just really good, and your editor goes, that just doesn't work. You got to give up that darling. So with the songs, for me, it's to go back to where it comes from. It's really having an idea what I could write about, and then making the story work, and then the writing the song. It could take 45 minutes, or it could take 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually true.
I worked on the song, which Red Velvet Slippers,
mm-hmm.
which was the
one of my favorites.
The song that really
yeah.
took off for me
yeah.
out of my first album. I it was 2 years.
Was
two
it?
Or maybe 3 years to write that, to make the story work.
Yeah.
How am I going to turn this around where it comes around and make something? Oh, she leaves her slippers to fade in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's it, and leaves El Paso forever.
See, and it's an answer song.
I saw the whole.
And it's
yeah,
an
I saw
an answer song.
The whole mm-hmm. story in my mind of this woman, this old woman, telling a story that when she was young, and she did this, and then she realized that what she had done was caused this, and so she stopped dancing
mm-hmm.
because her dancing was what caused things. And
kind of like
me,
the red shoes.
That, yeah. I felt really smart when
yeah.
I read that.
Well, and I
when
think
I finally
yeah.
got the story to work.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to ask the question.
Oh, I need to ask. Oh, the question. We ask every author
because
that is a guest because I don't want to look at the time. He's pointing to the clock. So, Junie, do you ever experience writer's block? And if so, how do you get around it? And if you don't experience it, what, you know, why is that?
My pat answer is there is no such thing.
Okay.
The longer answer is, I call it maybe you don't know exactly where you're going to go with the story right now.
Right.
And that's where you can get stuck. I've been really circling. I've got a current manuscript in the works that's at about 105,000 words. And I was getting to the last chapters, and I go, how am I going to tie this up? And it really, I've been working on this one for about 14 months, and I really just got it today. how I'm going to make it tie up, because I kind of knew what I wanted to do, but I kept like going back and forth. I go, oh my God, do I have to kill her at the end? Oh my God, I'm going to have to kill her.
You know, don't do that, because you're going to have people hate you.
Jim knows he kills people off left and right.
I kill people off like house flies.
I think, you know, what happens is people get maybe a little uninspired or as to where they're going to go, and then maybe they think, well, I have writer's block, or maybe they don't really have a story.
That's true.
That could be it. They don't really have a story to tell. Because if you have a story to tell, all you have, you know, it sounds so simple, but really all you have to do is start writing it down. And, you know, as you know, things are going to change as you write it.
That's true.
Sometimes I go, oh, my God, I can't believe she's doing this. Oh, my God, it's getting out of control. I go, wait a minute, I'm in control.
Back to the same comment we tell everybody, is that your characters dictate where your story goes.
They absolutely do. Because as we get used to the way they speak, they start taking their own
They do.
Thing. It's really an incredible thing.
They do. And, you know, as they do that, then your whole story changes. And you go, wait a minute, I didn't even think about that.
So I truly believe that we sort of have to just let it flow and let it go and see where it takes us. Now, I may go back and go, oh, no, I can't let you go there because we really need to look at this dead. And they're disappointed for a little while, but they let me, you know, lead them back.
That's how Caleb Stringfell wound up standing at the edge of that ravine with a Bowie knife in his hand. Screaming at the Comanches.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think that's always so fast. You know, not being a writer, I think that's so fascinating what y'all share that way. And we've had other people that say, when you're stuck on writer's block, just write something. You can't edit a blank page. Just write a recipe. I mean, writing something.
And I'll tell you, my friend Amy, she wakes up every morning before dawn, and she spends an hour or so sitting in front of a journal writing in longhand. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she says it's just mishmash, but sometimes a little couplet of words, or sometimes a sentence comes out of it that she can glean later. Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful practice. It's not one I do. But I do open my laptop and look at my manuscript. And sometimes I leave off when I'm writing a chapter. I learned this from Stephen King, from reading his book on writing, which is really a fabulous book for writers if you just want to read the story of how this happened for him and then his advice. And he says he leaves his chapter off. When he's about done for the day, he writes the next couple of lines of the next part of the story so he knows where to start up again.
Uh-huh.
And so I try to do that and leave it off. Or leave it off with a little short line or two and say, in which so-and-so does this.
Sure.
And then I sort of know where what I was thinking as I was writing the part before that.
Right.
And so writer's block, I say no. I say they're uninspired. And maybe, and so for me, writing dual stories, that makes it easy. If you get a little bit stuck on one part,
that's because you can go back to the story.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Hey, Junie, how can people find you? We're looking at the clock. Give us your, websites and all that good stuff.
JunieFisher.com. And you can get music and books, and you can also get Girls from Central on Amazon.
Okay.
And you can get it from the Walmart website. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. And it's kind of all over the place.
You might get it at your library.
You might, yeah.
And you can get it at your library. You can ask for it at your
library.
With the little numbers on the spine.
Ask them to get it. And then you can put that on Facebook and be so excited about it.
Yeah.
Are you coming to the Cowboy Festival?
No, I'm in Texas. I'm in Fort Stockton.
Ah, okay. So,
I'll play a show up there Thursday with Dave Stamey.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then I'll have a couple more shows in South Texas.
We like Dave Stamey.
Oh, his book is wonderful, isn't it? It's really his.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm gonna get it when I see him.
Oh my gosh,
he hasn't seen mine either, so we'll swap books.
I tell every DJ, I'm telling every DJ that hosts you, we have to have it to be able to tell the stories behind Dave's music. It's fantastic.
That's so great.
Yeah,
because there are great stories behind him.
Yeah.
He's a consummate storyteller.
He is.
And, you know,
yes,
Dave
he is.
Used to write Western novels.
Well,
did
yes,
you know
he,
that?
He, well, he, yes, yeah. I, yes, well, I have heard him talk about that on stage. And instead of a 400-page book, he wrote Land Where the Cedars Grow, and he just put it all in that one song.
And didn't he do it well? Yeah, when I first heard that, I said, Dave, I heard that, and I'd listened to the album, and I said, you know, what are you going to pull out to nominate for Song of the Year? And he goes, oh, I don't know. I was thinking of this. I go, no. I wrote it back. Dave, listen to me. Land Where Cedars Grow. That's the one you got to pull out.
Well, Junie, we have to say goodnight to you because we are out of time.
Oh my gosh, it's been so fun.
It was
an honor having you, trust me. It was fun having you for
letting me be on the show.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you for trusting Bobby that I wouldn't say anything bad. I hope I didn't.
Well, you could have.
No, I don't think she did.
No, she didn't.
Shoot.
You had your filter in.
We were hoping to have something, you know, racy tonight.
Yeah, but no luck. No soap radio. Okay. Junie, again, thank you so much. The book is, of course,
Thank you, Girls from Central. Thank you, Bobby, so much for having me.
And you can pick it up at Amazon and Junie's website, Barnes & Noble, every place that sells books.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Junie, and we are out of here, and take care.
Good night,
okay,
my friend.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Wow, what a show. And then, of course, the Cowboy Festival is this mm-hmm. weekend, and the Buckaroo
and
Bookshop.
Yep.
Yay.
Yep.
And Bobby Jean and Jim will be there.
We will.
Presiding over
boots
the,
on the ground.
The errant authors.
Come down and see us.
I got a really great message from Johnny Boggs the other day.
Oh, you did?
We did.
Did he say Stephen King's
going
to be there?
Yeah, no, but he said, if you're thinking about going and being a writer at the Buckaroo Bookshop at the Cowboy Festival, and some errant L.A. guy decides to ask you if your name is Stephen King, do yourself a favor and keep your mouth shut.
We'll miss him too.
What a great guy. Johnny is just, he's been on the show like 3 times, and he's just a really great guy. Mm-hmm. Plus, we really got to know him last year at the Cowboy Festival. Mm-hmm. So,
he
fortunately has turned into a friend instead of an enemy. Well, this Thursday coming up, we have John
Hagenberger,
and of course he writes the
Stan Wade. Oh my gosh,
his books are so much fun; they just go by so fast. And he's got a new science fiction one called Oxymoron that's out, and we'll be talking to John next Thursday, or this coming Thursday at 7 o'clock.
You know that some condors have been trained to take drones out of the air.
Yes, I read that.
I did not know that until I read Pandora's Block.
Well, there you go. That's Hagenberger. He'll throw stuff at you.
Like, whoa.
I talked to him this morning at 10 o'clock. Okay, what's his name? Brill will be here Thursday. Bobby Jean will be back in studio along with her.
My husband, Jim Bell.
Her hubby. And so we bid you adieu for Bobby Jean and myself. Jim Bell, we are out of here.